Welcome to Millennials and Money Cafe, where we create events to empower, inspire, and motivate millennials to love, live, and matter. Hi, I'm Coach Marilyn, and I coach, heal, and teach millennials how to remove their subconscious beliefs that are holding them back so they can break through to their next level of personal and professional success, wealth, happiness, and self-love. I want you to know that you matter and your actions matter. And today I have an awesome guest who is, I've been really waiting to share him with you, and hopefully we'll be sharing conversations with Paul Angone. I'm sorry, I forgot to ask you, Paul, is that how you say your last name?
It's Angone.
Angone. Paul, yeah. Angone, Italian.
That's right. Okay. Yeah, if you put your hands up when you say it, it's easier to say Angone.
Angone. All right. So Paul is a leading voice to and for 20-somethings. He is the best-selling author of 101 Secrets for Your 20s, a sought-after speaker, and the creator of allgrownup.com. And that is, the grown is like, G-R-O-A-N. So allgrownup.com, which has been read by millions of people in 190 countries. Paul graduated from Westmont College with a degree in communication studies and received his MA in organizational leadership from Azusa Pacific University. Paul lives in San Diego with his wife, Naomi, and their two daughters. And you can learn more at his website, allgrownup.com. And Paul, first of all, I want to say you're an incredible writer. Even the baby boomers love you. The people that have picked up your books and we've been laughing. You have a great sense of humor. And I first met Paul at a Millennials in Leadership symposium that was here in Santa Barbara a little while back, and he is an amazing speaker. So very entertaining, down to earth, again, very humorous, and but also very relevant and has a lot of information that millennials and the rest of the world can use. And so welcome, Paul.
Well, thank you for having me, Marilyn. It's an honor being here. Thank you for the kind words. And I'm just excited to be able to have a conversation with you today and hopefully encourage and inspire some people out there.
Yes. Well, that's a known. So let me just share a little bit with our listeners what we're going to be talking about. And then I would love for you to share your story. So, guys, we've decided today that we're going to talk about what Paul calls OCD, obsessive comparison disorder. And we're going to look at that also along with the fear of insignificance and the lack of trust. So trust issues. So those are some of the highlighted topics that we're going to be covering. But first, let's hear how Paul got into helping millennials, being a big brother to, or a big brother father, father, yeah, image for some, or mentor, or guide.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I mainly got into this myself just because I felt like such a failure after I graduated from college, had all these big hopes and dreams about what I was going to do with my life, felt like I climbed all the right steps. And then I got to the top and opened up the door, expecting to see kind of my dream life unfold in front of me. And instead, I felt like they had tricked me, and I ended up back in the basement, and it was dark and scary and a lot of locked doors. And I had no idea where to go or who to ask for help or what books to read or anything. I just felt so alone. And I felt like I was the only one struggling. And I thought, how could I be the only one struggling so bad? It seems like my friends are being so successful. You know, look at the amazing lives that are unfolding through social media. And then look at me, and I feel like, you know, I'm just a total failure, and none of my expectations are being met. And I don't even know how to figure out, how do I get out of this? And I felt so stuck. So that's when I became really passionate about, okay, I need to write about this. And I didn't even know what I was writing about necessarily, but I was just trying to pinpoint the struggle and the questions and what I was going through and why am I going through this. And so I'd be traveling around for different jobs, you know, working, you know, regular 8-to-5 jobs, but always writing, always trying to pinpoint, okay, what is going on here? And as I started talking to more people about it, I started realizing that I wasn't the only one. You know, I was lying to myself when thinking that I was the only one struggling. And then that really opened my eyes that said, wow, there's something big going on here. And we really need to honestly talk about it because we're all struggling, but we're all struggling to make it appear like we're not struggling. And that can become a scary reality for, I think, for a lot of us where we feel so alone in this. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the email that I get the most, even to this day, is, Paul, thank you for writing this. You know, I felt so alone. I thought I was the only one struggling. I thought I was the only one wrestling with this. Thank you for opening up this conversation. And that's really my goal is to let everybody know, hey, this is normal. This is hard. So let's start asking the right questions and work through this together.
Yeah, yeah. And your book, All Grown Up, sort of takes you through that whole passage. I love that, like, you're writing it as you go through it. It's what do I want to say here? Because there was a couple things as you talked about this that I think is pertinent for millennials to pick up on. Number one, it's like you, one of the things I know is that your passion is writing. So you never gave up on your passion, even though that wasn't your paying job, right?
Yes. That's correct.
Like you stuck with it and found ways to keep going, even though you were dissatisfied and frustrated with the system.
Yeah, exactly. And you mentioned my newest book, which is All Grown Up, and it's spelled grown like you're in pain again. And the subtitle is Searching for Self, Faith, and a Freaking Job. And that pretty much encapsulates what the entire decade looked for me. It was definitely, I felt like I was continually in process. Mm-hmm. And I did, I wrote it while I was living it and living it while I was writing it. Mm-hmm. So sometimes it was very painful and it was freeing and it was the whole kaleidoscope of emotions as I was going through that. But you're right. I kept with it. And the long story is, you know, I ended up getting rejected by a lot of publishers, kind of the classic, you know, I couldn't find anybody that would say yes, but yet I kept showing up and I kept doing it. Yes. And like you mentioned in that, I kept at this one piece, this writing piece, and I kind of figured out a powerful truth that I've lived by ever since. And that I encourage other 20 somethings, especially in, is that sometimes our biggest problems and our biggest pain points in our life, you know, this really hard stuff that we've had to work through ourselves, that typically can sometimes become the fuel that really fuels your passion to help people who have gone through a similar type thing. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that was the only reason I kept writing and kept working through all the rejection through publishers and nothing really working out for me, because I knew how important it was. Mm-hmm. And I knew there was people that needed that message because I knew how painful it was for me personally. Mm-hmm. And so sometimes I think there's a redeeming quality that happens with some of the really hard stuff that we've had to go through, because that fuels us to push through the obstacles to help others go through a similar type thing that other people don't care about as much because they haven't experienced that pain themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm also hearing, so I guess I want to speak to the passion part again, is like, because you had an inner knowing calling, because not everybody had, even though people are struggling the same way you are, but none of them were pursuing in, or not, I won't say none of them, but you pursued in finding answers to help other people through this versus, you know, other people might just be, you know, finding their jobs in banking or finance or, design or something like
that. Yeah. Yeah. I kept working at it and I kept writing and I call it, you know, your for millennials especially, I call it your side hustle. Yeah. You know, you might have your full-time job, but you have your side hustle, you know, kind of your dream, your passion, or that thing that you just can't let go of, that you're just like, man, I have to try this and I have to keep going at it, you know, even though it's not paying me at all, which my writing career, I didn't make any money off of it for years and years. But I also learned a valuable lesson that sometimes you have to find that place where you're working a job or in a career that maybe you don't feel like this is quite it. You know, it's not quite meeting all your needs or desires, but you continually work on something on the side, and it becomes this powerful place of momentum, really, because your dream feeds you while you work at your job, mm-hmm. and your job feeds you while you work at your dream.
Yes.
And so it's not so black and white. And I think that was a mistake I made in my early 20s. I felt like you either had to go gung-ho for your dreams, or you sell out and you work a 8-to-5 job you don't like. But yeah, I found that place that, you know, you got to work at both for many years, for most of us, and that's how you make it work.
Oh my God, I love that you're saying this, because this is one of the biggest things that working a lot of times with millennials that I have trouble with is them saying, but this is what I really want to do. And I'm like, well, we have to build a bridge.
Yeah.
You need to eat and you need to pay your rent and you know, you need to do whatever you need to do, like go home and live with your parents and work and do then start building your passion. Or
yeah,
I think because people can't find their ideal job too, right? The perfect job that they
yeah.
went to college for, that they think they went to college for. And then they say, all right, there isn't a job for me, so I'm going to make up my job. And so for a lot of people too, I'm going, well, are you an entrepreneur? Can you do that? You know, that's going to take
yeah.
time. That takes, you know, 1 to 3 years minimum to be able
yeah.
to support you. And
yeah.
so that the whole idea, like, I've got to work at something else to pay the bills to eat in order to create my dream, that
yeah.
instant gratification, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're totally right. And I learned that the hard way myself. You know, I was definitely kind of the naive 20-something who thought I was going to go do big things right away. And I kind of came to the understanding, too, that for millennials especially, you know, I don't think, you know, our big dreams or our big goals or our big plans are the problem. I think, like what we were discussing, it's not these big dreams that are the problem. It's our timeline
yes.
for how quickly we thought some of that was going to unfold, or how quickly we were going to be picking fruit off that tree that was growing, you know, and it takes a lot more time than we realized at the starting line. But we can't see it from the start. And it's a good thing that we can't see it at the start, or we might not take those first steps because we might be like, oh my gosh, this is going to take me 7 years. Well, gosh, it's not even worth it.
Right.
You know, but I learned though, you know, that it wasn't in spite of the struggle that I found my purpose. I felt like it was really because of the struggle
yes.
that I found my purpose. That was the point. You know,
yes.
I often tell millennials that failure doesn't ruin your story. Failure really helps you write it.
Yeah.
You know, that's the crux of your story. It's again that redeeming part. Every movie that we love, every book that we think is the best book, there's always that part, you know, and they call it the end of Act Two in the writing world, where everything falls apart for the hero.
Uh-huh.
You know, everything
okay.
crumbles, you know, all their dreams die, and then they find a way. They find a way to make it work. Something happens. There's that redemptive thing that happens. And I think that's so true for our lives too.
Mm-hmm.
So some of us might be experiencing that kind of end of Act Two right now, and it might not feel very purposeful. But let me encourage you to say, you know, it can be, and it might be that kind of secret sauce for you to figure out, okay, well, I got to do something about this. And so really, it's more of an elongated timeline
yeah.
than I think many of us would have expected when we started on that path.
Right, right. I always say you have to have a breakdown to have a breakthrough, and the breakdown is the breakdown of the beliefs and programming that you have, that you think this is how the world is, or this is who
yeah.
you should be, or, you know, all the programming of the lies that aren't you,
yeah.
so that you can break through to really then start really manifesting that life and following the things that
yeah.
really do mean something to you.
Yeah, exactly. And along those lines, I like to even use the words the breakdown and the breakthrough and kind of that breaking piece, because I even visualize it too as almost like a breakup. You know, it's almost even like
yes.
you're like a relationship breakup, you know, where you thought this person was your life.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden something happens and it's
yes.
all over and you don't
yes.
know what to do with yourself.
Yes.
I think for many 20-somethings, we go through that similar transition process with breaking up with our college, you know, because we left. You know, there was an ending there. Or we break up with our hometown. Or just break up with this ideal of this is the way life is when it all falls apart. And so you're right. There is that breaking process that happens. But yet we don't stay broken. You know,
right.
we get rebuilt stronger and more purposefully and more strategically. And so it is a tough, it is not easy. You know, let me not sugarcoat this because I don't like when people sugarcoat it and say, well, yada, 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 you'll get through it and then it'll be fine. You know, it is a tough, there's breaking involved and that
yes.
is always hard,
yes.
you know, but it is purposeful in there as well.
Yes. Well, our challenges, we grow from our challenges. Like you said, there's no failure. There's no failure if you learn from it. Then it's just all growth. It's that
mm-hmm.
breakthrough. But all right, so one of the, this I think is leading us nicely into, right, so the breakup. And I think, you know, breakup with college, with from home, from our parents. But I think we also have that breakup from ourselves, right,
yeah.
too. And so let's talk a little bit about this OCD. Why don't you explain, like, what that is? And
sure.
And because I think that's kind of related to this idea about who we think we should be, and this is like where the breakup should come.
Yeah,
a big
definitely.
Breakup should come. So
definitely.
Go ahead and share.
Yeah. I learned this, you know, again, this is through my own journey and just something I was noticing in my own life. And it was basically I would be on social media, I'd be on Facebook or Instagram or whatever the platform might be. And there was one night in particular that I remember you know, being on Facebook, and then, you know, I was hanging out with my young daughter at the time, and I had a great time with her. But then yet I went to bed that night and I was feeling really anxious and I couldn't figure out why. You know, I always try to define the anxiety that I'm feeling. You know, why? Where is this coming from? What is the source? And I'm like, I had a great time with my family. I had a great time with my daughter. There's so much good going on in my life. Why am I so anxious? And then I started thinking back to being on Facebook and I posted a picture that didn't get very many likes or whatever. And I was feeling anxious about that. It was like I wasn't being validated. And my life wasn't being validated. And I started really thinking through that and I started putting more terms around it, more research. And I came up with the idea of really, I think this is kind of a different version of, it's not, you know, OCD as we typically think about it, but it's obsessive comparison disorder. And I'm not trying to make light of, you know, OCD, how it's defined and people struggle with obsessive compulsive disorder, but obsessive comparison disorder has really become a popular term and it's really helped a lot of people because I think we all struggle with this, you know, where we're going online, especially nowadays, where you can compare yourself to anybody at any time all over the world and it makes you feel so lacking and it makes you feel like your life is not amounting to much because we're looking at the amazing lives of everyone around us. And I call it kind of our own PR spins that we're putting on our own Facebook profiles to make our lives look amazing, even when it might not be that way. But it's putting this kind of illusion out there. And so this can be really tough. And I think this can just can bring about so much anxiety and depression. It can kill your momentum. It can really make it hard, especially if you're pursuing your own path, if you're trying to create your own business or pursuing a side hustle. There's not a lot of exciting things to brag about on that journey because it is pretty hard. So it can really halt your momentum if you're comparing yourself to your friends around you and all the things that they have that you don't. That can really halt your momentum pretty fast.
Mm. Yeah. And so what is the solution to that? What are you recommending to the millennials?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a few things. You know, it could be very practical and just looking at some of the platforms that you're using and are these building you up or are these more tearing you down? And so it might be even analyzing your social media use or it might be analyzing how much TV you're watching. You know, I definitely think those two are some of the strongest versions of where this obsessive comparison disorder can come from. But then also, you know, I think at a deeper level, it comes from, you know, what I call kind of claiming your signature sauce. It's claiming and finding and uncovering that flavor that you bring to the world that no one else can. So it's really combining these ingredients that you have that is based in your story, that is your strengths and your values and your passion. And it's really bringing those together and trying to hone and serve the world your signature sauce. And I even love that metaphor. I love picturing a chef in the kitchen and experimenting with different ingredients and trying to find that flavor and having a lot of experiments go up in flames, but they just keep chipping away at it.
Yes.
And I think as we do that for our own lives, and we do what author Parker Palmer calls in regards to finding your calling, he talks about it as claiming your authentic selfhood. Mm-hmm. So it's really just claiming your authentic self and then bringing that to the world. And I think that really at the core helps so much with this obsessive comparison piece, because then you can give yourself permission to be excited about other people's success. Mm-hmm. Because you're no longer wishing or hoping or thinking, oh, I wish I had that, or I wish I was more like that person, I wish I was more charismatic or better speaker or better at organization or whatever it might be. You can be excited about what other people are good at, and you can be excited what you're good at. And how do I leverage that to bring that to the world and offer that as a gift? So, you know, obviously I still struggle with comparison. It's not like there's this magic bullet, but I think that does help in regards to getting away from that pattern of, man, look at everybody's amazing life and mine is nothing like that.
Right, right. And so, yeah, building your own unique self and that takes a lot of work there, and that can take a lifetime for some people, but just realizing that there's nobody else like you, and there wasn't supposed to be, and you're supposed to share the part of the puzzle of who you are, you know.
Yeah.
You're supposed to bring your sauce so everybody can try it and enjoy it and express it. And so I think that's great. So part, let me think here for one sec. One of the things we were talking about is that also there's a correlation here to millennials, right, comparing, but I think millennials also have really, and I don't, you know, generalizing here, but have such a high standard for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
There's like these, if I can't do something right away, then I'm not meant to do it. There's sort of lost the I need to do it, you know, if I can't do it really fast, or if, like you said, if I don't get, you know, 1,000 likes, then it's not meant to be.
Yeah.
And all this, and yet, and so I think it goes, there's something around to about being significant in the world.
Yeah. Yeah, you're totally right. And this is a tough one to get down to the root of, because it took me a long time again to realize that truly being successful in your 20s is not about enjoying the feast. It's more about setting the table. Mm-hmm. And I write about that in my first book, 101 Secrets for Your 20s, that's really what I figured out the hard way. You know, and that maybe even being successful in your 20s is not even about finding that perfect job. It's not finding the right job, but it's about bringing the right you to whatever job you're working. And it was just this continual process for me of figuring out that, Paul, if you want to do something big, you have to first be very faithful and perseverant in the very small. In all those things that no one is ever going to see. You know, it's literally like you're bringing that bucket of water and you're filling up that well time and time again. And it's not going to be until the you know, after 5,000 buckets of water, is anybody going to see that water start to overflow? They're not going to see the 4,999 that went into it. And so it takes a lot of time. So again, I think as a generation, this fear of insignificance, I really do think it's true. You know, I spoke about that at the leadership conference that we met. As leaders are trying to, you know, identify with millennials, I really think millennials do have this fear of, you know, I'm really insignificant, and that really bugs me.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for millennials, it's learning to find significance in what we deem insignificant. And it's in those insignificant moments that you're stringing together that you are creating something significant. you are putting in the work and the time, you know, that success in your 20s, it takes a lot of grit and humility and perseverance and a lot of unsexy words that aren't going to make it on the 20-something Hallmark collection, you know. You're not going to get that Hallmark card that says, you know, keep at it. You got to keep being gritty.
Yes.
And so it's really, I think it's taking the best of both worlds. It's taking that, the optimism of millennials. It's taking the dreaming big. It's taking that, you know, I want to go do and change things. I don't want to just do the status quo. But then realizing that to really change things, you're going to have to do a lot of small things very, very well and string those together. And the outcome might not look exactly like you thought it would at the beginning. But my bet is it's going to look even better than you thought it was. But it took a lot longer than you thought it would at the starting line.
Yeah. So I love that. And so a couple notes while I'm making as you're talking. So I'm, you know, one of the things that I think you're talking about, the nitty gritty and the little things, is one, being true to yourself, you know, falling in love with yourself and being honoring who you are and being consistent and persistent and doing what you say, you know, it's like, if you, those sort of things, and like learning just to be a leader, right? There's it's like showing up on time, doing the job you said you would do, doing what you said you would do, following through on the things, you know, being becoming self-motivated. So I find this like growing pains, you know, it's like you're growing up into yourself so that you have enough energy and capacity to be that leader that's going to create some significance in the world. But modeling that as you go, you're being significant and influencing the people around you, others around you. I noticed in your book, like, it was really important. They're key people in your life that helped guide you. Where if you didn't have those key people that had asked you questions or were modeling their significant, you know, their growth, you might be in a totally different place than you are today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Most definitely. Yeah. It is. You're so right. It is, you know, again, I love that metaphor, finding your signature sauce, because that's what it looks like to me. It's uncovering those ingredients within you and being comfortable with those. And it's really understanding your why. You know, why am I passionate about certain things? Why do I get energetic and energized by certain things and drained by others? It's just a process of understanding that why within you and really the deep down motivation, so that you can pivot easier. You know, you can go off the standard path a little bit easier because you know why you're doing the things that you're doing. You're living intentionally. You know, it's really bringing that intentionality to your life, because, you know, we all live intentionally. I just think most of us live intentionally unintentional.
Yes.
You know, it's being intentional with our unintentionalness. And I think I've been there myself, where you get stuck in that rut. But it's really looking at your life really intentionally and finding why are you motivated by certain things and pulling out those ingredients and then figuring out, okay, where do I place these? In what capacity do I utilize these to best use these ingredients in my career, in my relationships, in my life? Because you're right, this signature sauce, this thing within you isn't isolated, and it's not meant to just be contained. And as just within you, it's meant to be shared with the world, and it's meant to be done in community. And I really believe that. And the relationships that you have around you will be a big part of that, of that journey for each of us. And so it's very complex. You know, there's no really magic bullet here. But as long as we're intentional in the process, that's when we make progress.
So I think that it's you're talking about, to me too, making conscious decisions after we. You know, like, I think of the 20s as like, that's a time to go explore. That's a time to go out and challenge your beliefs, or go learn about another country, or learn about another city, learn about another person's perspective, to learn how, you know, try different jobs, to, you know, to go out and get your hands and feet dirty. But following, like, where's your heart lead you? Where's your gut lead you? But still honoring, you know, that uniqueness in you, And but doing it consciously or intentionally, like you're saying, not letting the world, you know, like, oh, we're in a recession, or oh, there's, you know, no jobs, or oh, you know, I don't have money, or I don't have this.
Yeah.
You know, run your life.
It's- yeah.